This is Decentralized, the Decentralized Trials and Research Podcast. We gather here with friends and guests to talk about the latest ways to make research and clinical trials around the world more inclusive, more accessible, more resilient, and more sustainable, all by using decentralized methods. This podcast is recorded live on Clubhouse every Friday, 12 to 1 Eastern, on the TGIF DCT show at the Decentralized Trials Club. You can join the live sessions and add your voice every Friday at noon Eastern time with the free Clubhouse app by following the Decentralized Trials Club. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform to get notified of new episodes. Following the club and subscribing will also help you stay current for any of the bonus content we may drop. And now, it's time to decentralize. Hello and welcome for those of you joining us, whether live here on TGIF DTRA on a lovely fall Friday, or for those of you who may be joining the replay, whether through a podcast or other video streams that are out there. Thanks for joining us here on TGIF DTRA. We gather here most Fridays to cover a range of different topics around improving access into clinical trials and clinical research in general. We enjoy having guests from around the world sharing their work, sharing their vision, sharing their insights and data and evidence that they're building. Those insights, as you know, have come historically for us, whether from patients, sites, sponsors, regulators, technologists, the list goes on and on. We love hearing your voices. So remember, if there's a topic you'd love to see us cover in the weeks and months ahead, please be sure to drop us a line. You can always message folks like myself or Jane Miles or Amir Kalali on your favorite social platforms, whether LinkedIn or otherwise. Or if you're not sure how to use those, secretariat@dtra.org is a great way to let us know what topics you'd love to see covered, especially if you'd like to join us. And remember, if you've got some cool data or white paper or publication you're working on, it's a great opportunity to bring that forward to reach a broader audience with the work that you're developing and publishing and sharing. With that in mind, I'm really excited that we have our guests for this week's conversation, because there's a lot of conversation being had around site input into decentralized. Do sites hate decentralized methods? Are sites the barrier and the obstacle to the adoption of decentralized methods? Or are we just not listening? Are we just not getting it right because we're not having meaningful conversations at the right time in order to figure this out together? And so I think that really sets up some of the conversation we have today. We're thrilled to welcome some of our friends from Transcelerate. For those of you that aren't familiar with Transcelerate, that is a very large nonprofit collaboration featuring most of the planet's large and now even a number of mid-sized biopharmaceutical companies. Well, as we were saying, Transcelerate is there as a nonprofit collaboration, really amongst most of the planet's largest biopharmaceutical companies. They're working together and have been now for well over a decade to tackle some of our community's largest challenges from the vantage point of the sponsors. But sponsors don't work on an island, and so it makes sense that they're highly engaged, whether with patients, sites, and others. And that really sets up today's conversation. Jane, maybe you could cue this one up for us a bit, because I know you have been more than neck deep in this space, maybe chin deep in this space.
Yeah. Gee whiz. So first, I want to acknowledge that it's been a real pleasure collaborating with Transcelerate as we set up our shared objectives and then created some complementary outputs. How did this get started? Well, basically, like you were saying, Craig, we had heard that sites are not being heard. And so between us, DTRA and Transcelerate, started to work on some tools to help with that input and also gathering insights from experience. And Today we're going to talk a little bit about the transcellular recommendations, but I would say they're complementary and not meant to match exactly with what we're building at DTRA. So big acknowledgement that we worked hard not to duplicate each other's efforts, but rather to make sure we were trying to account for site needs and site voice in ways that were practical for sponsors.
That is almost the definition that my friend Frieda Lewis Hall, when I was over at Pfizer, used to talk about for metacollaboration, that we can have different collaborations out there. They're chartered differently, their members are different, but only if they are communicating with one another can you create the right boundaries, the right handoffs, and the right handshakes so that we can work together and make sure that we're not doing things that are redundant. Well, why don't we jump right in? We've got two folks from Team Transcellerate. I see here in the room with us, Anna Christensen from over at AstraZeneca, as well as Laura Renton from over at GSK. Anna, you win alphabetically, whether by first or last name. So perhaps, and by company name. So no matter what, I think you're going to get to introduce yourself first. Please say hi to folks. Let us know where in the world are you and what do you work on by day?
Yes, hi, and good morning and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anna Christensen, and I'm joining from Gothenburg, Sweden. So I don't know if that's the first time, but here is Sweden. I spent the last 15 years working in clinical trials, and I've specialized in areas mostly around logistic and manufacturing of IMP and quality assurance. But my experience also includes working at a hospital pharmacy in one of Sweden's largest hospitals and actively working with sites in clinical trials. And so a few years ago, I made the transition into the pharmaceutical industry, initially focusing on quality as well. But then I got introduced and moving into the field of decentralized trials and the technology that supports them. So, and I'm really excited about that and really glad I got that opportunity. So over the past year, my role has been centered around being part of both developing and implementing innovative digital solutions to modernize the clinical trial processes and also enhance both the patient and site experience. So with that, my role is really making it easy for everyone in that process. And that's why I was really excited in getting into that part with Transcellerate, which I've been joining for the, I think it's been 3 years now. And really getting into site feedback and how we can, from a sponsor side, improve that. So I'm really pleased to be here today to share our experience and discuss these efforts. And yeah, thank you so much for having the opportunity to be here today.
Thanks so much, Anna. It's great to have you all the way from Gothenburg.
Yeah, exactly.
And Laura, if you don't mind introducing yourself, and I'll also set you up with the first question around the why. Why
Okay.
did Transcellerate choose to prioritize this challenge? But first, let's meet you.
Yes, thanks, Craig. Hello, everyone. My name is Laura Renton. I am here based in sunny UK, not sunny UK, but a very wet UK. My role is a digital enablement lead within GSK. This is a role that has very much been created post-COVID to really kind of be almost aligned with the Transcellerate working group that we're in, modernizing clinical trial conduct. That's really what it's been about. It's really been about harnessing what was put out in a rush over in COVID and bringing in some of these tools, but standardizing it and making it the norm, the way that we work within GSK. These are not decentralized trials. And in fact, we don't really like the word decentralized trials at DCT. These are just tools to help facilitate our clinical trials. And we really want to, my team, we're about enablement, digital enablement. It's about making the process, implementable, scalable, usable, so that our teams can do it on their studies with ease. So that's really what my job is about. I spent most of my career, so this was post-COVID, my team was created then, so I've been doing this for about 5 years now, but frighteningly 5 years now, but most of my career was actually spent as a CRA. I was on the coal face at sites daily, hearing their troubles, having those train troubles myself with multiple logins and all of those things. And yeah, for a good 15 plus years, I spent my out there with the with my sites, really trying to make their lives as easy as possible. So bringing this into where we are now and working with Transcelerate in the site guidance workshop work stream is really, it's kind of bringing my two things together, modernizing these clinical trials, but also listening to our sites and trying to make it work for them, because they're our portal to the patients that we want to help, right? So
Thanks so much, Laura. How did this get prioritized within Transcelerate? What made this be become, I mean, there's only so many things any initiative could do. Why focus on site insights across the Transcelerate ecosystem?
yeah, so we as a group, we actually went out and crowdsourced with sites directly. We wanted to hear what they needed, right? What was their frustrations? And we were talking to them about DCT specifically. Obviously, some of it bleeds into other frustrations that happen, but you know, we did try to we did it quite structurally. We worked with the SCRS. So for those who don't know, the Society of Clinical Research Sites, there's a great consortia out there supporting the site networks that we work with. We work with them to get a list of diverse sites globally, not just in the States, but also in Europe. And we actually even got it over to Asia Pac. And we did actually get some and a variety of different sites. So, you know, GP centers, great academic centers, hospitals, novel, you know, places of business, etc. So got a real sort of diverse range, and we conducted interviews with them, really kind of drilled into what is their sort of experience with DCT, what are those pain points, what are the frustrations that they have, and really trying to kind of drill that down and understand what the problems were. And there were some major themes that came out, right? One of them was being, you know, the struggle to implement that efficiently. You know, they have sponsors left, right, and centre telling them they've got to use all these tools, but then they don't give them any help or support in order to implement them at a site level. So that sort of support network, being able to implement efficiently and, you know, deal with all these multiple systems and things like that. It's not that they don't want to use them, it's just that they need help using them. So that was one theme. And another thing was really not being able to put that input, give their feedback easily to a sponsor to say, well, hang on a second, it might work better like this, or we've had experience with this particular way of working or this tool, and giving that feedback, and you know, real live time, you know, live feedback sort of during a study. You know, I'm having problems with this vendor. There's that their help stuff isn't helping me, you know, or whatever it might be. And so those were the two things that really kind of came out. And so we spent a lot of time. We did a workshop together once we got all this information from the sites, and we really talked about, like, actually, how can we tackle these key themes that were coming out. And the two deliverables that the site guidance worksheet worked on were really to tackle those two themes that I highlighted there.
I'm going to back up just for a sec, Laura, and talk a
Please.
little bit about the sites. Because even defining the sites we would interview was collaborative between DTRA and TCB,
That's
which
very
was
true.
pretty cool. And what I really appreciated about that was that TCB helped us identify some sites in different regions of the world, South America, and some in Japan and China. And CRA helped bring along some sites that I would call our purpose-built for using these sorts of tools. And so it was pretty interesting to look for the themes and differences across the site types, which is why we tried to cover a broad range of I'll call them site archetypes.
Yeah. And also adding into that the culture and the different understanding and what the different sites have been using, because these are sites who are actually having used the technologies and are have experienced in these types of studies. So I think that was really important as well. And also national legislation and regulation that we also need to consider if we're doing these global trials. So I think, yeah, the variety of different sites in different countries, I think that's a real strength in what we saw and what we got.
So, Jane, I'm really glad you brought that up in terms of the diversity of the sites. Can you guys talk a little bit about very sort of high level? Did you find that the sites had one voice, or did you find that depending on the type, the feedback was very different, or was there exactly the same feedback no matter what their background?
Well, I mean, Anna, I don't know if you want to. As I said, and Anna, you can jump in as well. There were some really key themes that came out. Similar sort of feedback that was around. There were some of those sites who sort of said, "Well, actually, I've never really used it, so I don't really know from experience, but I think this is what I would like." So there were some differentiate, like different experiences around it like that. But as I say, there were these key themes that sort of came out of those interviews, and it's that support, whether it was, because they had one vendor that they used and one help desk didn't work, or they're using 20 different vendors and everything was a problem, the scale didn't matter too much. Anna, I don't know if you want to add to that.
No, I think, I mean, overall, yes, it was pretty much the same feedback or, things that we've discovered. And yeah, but I think also some were maybe some. I was in an interview with Japan, for example. And I mean, yeah, the difference of culture in different, I think that plays along with what kind of technology and how you use it. And also, as Laura said, in regards to the different elements that we discussed with the sites, I think that also can vary, like home nursing and things like that.
I would just add that if the site was, I'll call it purpose-built, they had some different feedback to Dr. Kalali's point, right? Like they were built to use these things, and their struggles were sometimes being asked to use technology that they already had and knew how to use really well. So the training theme and the complexity of using the technology solutions was consistent. It just came from a completely polar opposite direction for some of those sites.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing a bit more about the results. I will tell you, Anna, Laura, as a someone who sometime in the last century was a PI and then was in the industry for a long time, I'm definitely going to have some hard questions for you. So
I'm sure you do.
I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait till we sort of share kind of your results, but get ready.
Yeah.
Well,
Wonderful.
let's lift the curtain then, because I certainly want to hear some of the key takeaways and some of the highlights, and then I want to make sure we have time in this conversation to also talk about, okay, now that we're hearing, what are we doing, and how do we do different, and how do we signal to sites that their voice is being heard, whether we can make those changes or not, because the worst thing we could do is put out a suggestion box that makes it look like we've never opened it. And so let's start with those insights so that we can give Amir some good stuff to dig into. Anna Laura, are there some key takeaways that you'd like to focus on, either things that validated an assumption in your mind or surprised you with an insight that you might not have expected?
Well, I mean, I think we could, to talk about the solutions that we put in place, one of them being the sponsor considerations for gathered for obtaining site feedback, which is the solution that myself and Anna worked on to kind of really tackle that second theme that I brought up about really not being able to give that feedback and really under sort of providing the sponsors with the the considerations that they need to consider. And you hit the nail right on the head when you say, there's no point putting in a suggestion box that if you never open it, or if you read them and never do anything with it. So really the sponsor considerations, the tool that we created was really to it was it the, I think the main part of it is really a sort of like a thought flow, like a workflow, but it's a thought flow. So thinking about that feedback that you want to collect so that you can that you can do something with it and respond back to the sites to let them know that you've done something with it, so that they're not feeling like they're screaming into a vacuum, right? So when we created this tool that we put together, we sort of drafted it, and because we were talking about site feedback, we were like, well, actually, we need to go back to those sites that we talked to and say, are we on the right track? Is this the right thing? And actually, we got some like super positive, response from them, that they feel like this is really key to help sponsors really kind of understand their frustrations, and kind of that they can. That if a sponsor utilizes the tool that myself and Anna created, and our colleague Carol, who couldn't be with us today, but also she put a lot of hard work into, but if the sponsors utilize this tool to help streamline that collection of feedback and utilize it appropriately, and tell them that they've used it and that they're being heard, that the site's satisfaction on that would be it just increases everything, right? So they feel that they are heard and engaged, and that they're making a difference as well, right? When they can see something happening. So we had a super amount of really positive response back from the sites that we spoke to, and then we went back to, so which was great.
Let me ask a question about that. So,
Please.
in your members, are you aware of? So, you can imagine the feedback from sites will be protocol specific, right, to the sponsor, right? So, do you know of any sponsors that have anything formal in place where there is an internal expectation the site feedback is acted on and feedback given to them? Are you aware of any formal processes within sponsors to do that?
So not within any sponsors that I know, and it's not something that came up. It's something that with ourselves within GSK is, the work's in progress to kind of understand and have a standardized process. This is what I'm all about, is making sure that we have these processes to ensure that we can do this. But it's certainly something that I think it's quite obvious that it's not happening out there in the industry, within sponsors, because sites are saying that they don't feel heard. So there's obviously not got this feedback loop, right?
I'm guessing then, frankly, kind of whether satisfaction is good with the company or not, may be driven really by individual leaders within the companies who, for whatever reason, have chosen to do something about it versus kind of systematic organizational systems put in place, right? So my question is, we can't really rely on, the graces of individual great leaders within pharma maybe to do it. Do you think there's any role for TransCelerate to kind of standardize or try and push their members to think about systematic systems for? And look, it's not just sites. You talk to any CRO, they'll complain about very similar things. I've not been brought in early enough. I've not been included early. These things are not unique to sites. So I guess my
No.
question is, can we make pharma better listeners? Is that a thing that's possible?
I'd love to think that this is the start of making pharma better listeners, right? So this solution that we put in place is really to encourage, as I say, that thought flow from a sponsor's perspective to understand. The introduction itself talks about what are the benefits, why should you be listening to your sites, what can this actually do? So that's the kind of the starting point. Okay, you want to do it, great, this is what you need to think about, this is how you need to do it, and go through that process to make it, a purposeful, intentional feedback collection. Because there's no point, we know on our clinical studies, oh, we used to go, oh, well, let's just collect lots of data points just in case, and then never do anything with that data. Same thing, same principle, right? Let's collect purposeful feedback, the stuff that we can do something about, right? Otherwise, the sites or whoever that's giving the feedback feels that it's not happening. So I'd like to think that this is the start. I don't think sponsors have been very good at this. They kind of go, well, you know, we're paying you the money, you know, that's all, it's fine, and all the rest of it. Just get on with it, right? And this is our study. But actually, they're seeing sites as much more as partners now, right? And going, and their CRO partners too. Really, actually, we need to be doing this together. They're the experts. They're the people who are on the front line talking to our patients, right? So hopefully, I don't think Anna, sorry, I'm talking.
Yeah.
When we talked a lot about what this solution was very much we were trying to steer away from this is how you have to do it, as in, but this is how you can think about it and make decisions for yourself, right? So, and we didn't want to sort of, and we couldn't really be enforcing of it because some sponsors already have certain things in place, so they can just adapt it, or they can move things about, or they can standardize it, or whatever. So yeah, we had to be a little bit flexible one. But as I say, I don't know if Transcelerate has the right way, the ability to enforce it. It's a bit like the SPFQ, right? They have a formal tool that is there that is utilized by a majority of sponsors now, but it's not enforceable, right?
Laura, I will
And
say
if
Transcelerate's lawyers know me very well, and I will stand up for them here and say that Transcelerate cannot dictate to its membership the adoption of any methods for
exactly,
antitrust reasons and otherwise, but they can
absolutely.
stand up important tools and hopefully make it so that sponsors want and need to use these without any other mandates.
Exactly, but
So Pete
exactly, but
Boyle, if you're listening, give me a You owe me a cocktail at the next reception.
if But
Yeah,
I think
so I'm
the
just going
point
to
is that
interject
yes.
with one, like to your point, Laura, this is perhaps a starting point. And the other, this came out so loudly and clearly this week. Sponsors will tell you that they're partnering with sites, but they're partnering with PIs and thought leaders, not necessarily operators or the site directors who are thinking about resource management and budget elements and technology and workflows, right? So you need both. And that was something that came out loud and clear. Be clear who you need the answer from, because your PI may not actually know all of the nitty-gritty details of what it takes to implement X.
No, and I think one of the general considerations and the things that are in our tool is actually, you know, being directive of who will, you know, be answering the feedback, you know, so it is actually the right persons who provide us with the insights. So I think, I mean, we have been really trying to be as, you know, give as much considerations that we can and details and things to think about. And also, as Laura said, sponsors may have some other tool for it, but there is also considerations in here where you can actually, you know, add on to what you already have. So I think, yeah, I think there are, as you said, Laura, there are improvements. So, but this is a way of, you know, having them think about what is needed and what you should consider when seeking this feedback from a site. But of course, the first thing is actually knowing that you should do it. So.
We're going to keep this conversation going, but we remember we always like to hear from folks that are here in the room with us. We'll open up the mic in a few minutes for questions, but if you have a question on your mind based on anything you've heard so far, and you're here with us live, feel free to take advantage of the chat feature here and drop it in and let us know, and we'll be sure to fit that in. If you prefer not to type and you would rather jump into the conversation, either with your experience or insights, we'll open that up in just another few minutes.
I also like efficiency, as everyone knows. So I guess as a from a site perspective, I wonder how many surveys and questions of similar type, maybe not as comprehensive, they might have to fill from every sponsor and every CRO they work with. So I actually really think this is a great reason why maybe Transcelerate or DTRA in our work, we can consolidate on behalf of lots of people. You know, companies will still may want to do their own sort of specific things. But I think it's very useful, frankly, because you can imagine sites, they're apparently quite busy trying to recruit patients. So constantly getting surveys from, 300 partners must be quite difficult. So I actually really like the fact if one could kind of make this kind of information available so that the sites aren't having to, try and fill out surveys every 5 minutes. It's a bit like if you notice no matter what you do in a day, whether it's getting a haircut, going to the doctors, going to a restaurant, they'll want their feedback, right? So I don't want sites feeling the same.
So this is something that we considered in this very thing, right? It was actually what feedback doesn't necessarily mean a survey, right? So this is the, what data are you trying to collect? Is it just a chat function that you can actually trawl through chat box data, on feedback that's been given, and they have instant access to it, and they can go, this isn't working. Oh, okay, that goes into our inbox and we can deal with that feedback. Or is it a timed survey that's done at the end of every study, if that's the way that you want to do it? Or is it something outside of that, a little pop-up smiley face scale that comes in when they start log into their site portal? If it's red, then it flags something to come up to. So there's lots of different ways of collecting feedback and different types of feedback that tell you different things. And this is what this solution is about, is really kind of getting the sponsors to think about what is it that they want to know. Thinking about the site burden, who's going to be completing it? Do they have the time to complete it? Are they going to get halfway through a 30-page questionnaire and go, well, I can't be bothered with that anymore? Or are you going to just do a click a green smiley face and everything's great? Think really intentionally thinking about what you want to collect and how you want to collect it and who is going to be providing that is really the crux of this solution, and to really get sponsors to think about it appropriately.
And one thing that I found, I mean, as you said, Laura, like there are different ways, and we also did like considerations for each of these mechanisms where you things to think about and consider when actually you selected one of them as well. And one, as you said, like having these technologies that we use, maybe you can integrate it into that solution to receive that feedback that is linked to the different things that you're using as a sponsor in regards. So I think there are so many different ways that you can collect feedback, and but of course, questionnaires that takes 40 minutes now.
Not always the way to do
No, exactly. Creates the
it.
frustration that we're trying to avoid and the site burden that we're trying to avoid.
So the solution, as I said, we assess this general sort of thought flow about data collection and feedback collection in general. And then when you sort of got decided what you want to collect, it then talks about those mechanisms and on how to collect that, right? So, and then as Anna rightly said, that they have some of those mechanisms have like considerations specifically for them, like survey burden, or the fact that if it's a green smiley face, I might just press it just to get it out of my face when it pops up in my window all the time, that sort of thing. So those are the sorts of considerations to think about the best way of deploying your feedback collection tool, right? So is
And
there
I would
a
say that's an interesting and a little different nuance, right? There's feedback and there's input, right? So to Laura's point, one of the things that one of the work teams was testing in the workshop we did this week was a survey prototype that would be aggregated, anonymized insights data from sites about DCT deployment, what worked, what didn't. But one of the testing elements here is, can you complete this in a reasonable amount of time? Would you be willing to? And what was really fascinating is the audience I thought would be sponsors. That's who I thought the data would most serve. Sites want access to it, so they're learning from other sites what's working and what's still a little bit hard.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And also on that topic, sharing, I think it was when we actually got back with the draft to the sites and we received the feedback back on regards to our tool, that sharing the feedback with the wider than just for that site, also sharing the learnings that you got from when you had feedback and input, sharing that with other sites in the same study. That was one of the things as well, which I think is super important as well. So we learn from each other,
Yep.
and learn from the different sites, in a study. So
Yeah, and
this
it
is
was.
interesting and a little surprised me. Sorry, Lynn.
That's
When
fine.
we were asking the sites, are you willing to provide this feedback? They were more willing when it was not going directly back to the sponsor.
Do we feel that that's because they don't think the sponsors are going to do anything about it? And that's the point of our tool, is to kind of encourage the sponsors to reach out and get that. And you know, part of this tool that we created was, you know, sharing that feedback loop, sharing, going back to the sites, tell them that you've listened, tell them what you're doing, but also sharing across internally your studies, the sites that you work with. I'm sure every sponsor has a site network that they always work with. Can you share that across that? So that was kind of part of that feedback loop part, right? And how you use that data, how do you use that feedback? Is it just going to talk to you, make changes on this current study, or is it going to inform the next study as well, and the next study, and the next study?
I mean,
So it links really linked lovely with the work that you're doing, Jane, and that database.
so Laura, you said you started as a CRA. Do
I
you
did.
feel like when you were a CRA, you can imagine, I mean, one of the challenges is, I think, there may not be enough education when it comes to explaining to sites why maybe certain things are happening in the protocol. I always think, in a site feedback, there's some things that are like which sponsors could possibly change. There are other things they can't, whether for regulatory reasons or others. Do you feel the average CRA is equipped by their management to even know to explain kind of all those things? And do you feel that sponsors try and explain that? So in my experience, it's kind of, you know, they get the protocol, it is what it is. And you know, there's not, and they have questions, but some of them are all reasonable questions. Some you can easily explain why the sponsor would love to change it. It might improve recruitment, but there's a regulatory reason why they can't. Other things, you know. So, how much do you think there's in the process of actually a dialogue between sponsors and sites, kind of understanding the rationale of why things are the way they are?
Yeah, I think poor blimey, I they probably don't have enough. Yeah, there were certainly some difficult conversations that I would have had as a CRA that I would go, sorry, I don't know the answer to that.
Sure.
I just through my own level of understanding, I'm not the expert. I can talk as much as I possibly can about a protocol and about an indication that it might be in, but sometimes I don't necessarily have that. So providing that information would be great from my central teams or whoever's written that protocol on the reasons why, just as those talking points, or getting those key opinion leaders and the right people at the sponsor around a table together to actually have a discussion around why these things are important is possibly somewhere that then you get the experts talking to the experts then, right? CRAs can do anything with training. As long as you give them the information and tell them that the site needs it, they will give it to them. That's what their job is. They train the sites, they make sure they're doing it, following the protocol. They're getting those patients in and they're doing it correctly, right? If somebody told me, here's the list of reasons why this protocol is written this way, I would use that in my site initiation visit. Great, thanks very much. You know, no problem. So I think it's a good point that sponsors probably could do it better. But is it too late at that point? You know, at an SIV, providing it to
Oh, yeah, sure. No,
the CRAs.
I think the feedback you got was very much that sites and everyone wants to be involved earlier. No question.
Earlier.
But I think
Exactly.
sometimes, you know, the things that annoy sites, at least as a, you know, PI, if I understand the rationale, that the madness, there's actually a rational reason for it, I might be able to put up with it easier than if I just think it's a
True.
mad thing that there's absolutely no rationale for, you know.
True. True.
So that's what I mean. You're absolutely correct, though. At that point, yeah, it's much better if we can solve some things before the whole thing started.
Yeah. And as Jane, I think you put in the chat, that so that feasibility point, right? It's not about feasibility. It's also feasibility of this of this of the protocol as well, right? And if we can get in that prior from sites feedback, well, this didn't work on this study. Well, we're not going to do it on the next study. I mean, if it could be that way, or we come and talk to you before we look at a protocol entirely, then that's helpful, right? So, yeah.
Jane, have we covered kind of the main points of the feedback that we got? Should we talk about that a little?
So we're still distilling some of those insights,
Yeah.
but I wanted to really reinforce two key points. First, the people who were with us in the room had mostly never been asked any of these questions. Second, feasibility is a nightmare. So I'm going to drop number three. We were trying to find ways not to integrate it into feasibility for a bunch of reasons. And then the SIP portal came up, and we said, okay, that's a topic we can't cover today. The third is very much aligned to what Laura has mentioned. Sites are really very invested in being heard, but they want to know what happened with the feedback. So even if you use the Six Sigma methodology, like I heard this from the customer, and this is the decision taken, and this is why. That's totally missing for them. If you can tell them why you can't implement it, it may help them understand why the protocol was written in certain ways. So, but I don't see that implemented consistently, and certainly our audience had not experienced that. I think one thing they also asked us for is some visual tools to help better understand how all of these different elements would fit within a protocol, because currently it's all siloed information and even trained in siloed manners. So that was one of the deliverable outputs we were testing with the sites. And again, the surprise to me was they loved it in two different formats for two different purposes, and went one further and said, and we want this for our patients as well in patient-facing materials to help them understand what is expected, even at the consent process. So big asks. Not sure how it'll be implemented, but it gave me a lot of hope that the sites are willing, even though they do feel like they have been saying the same thing for a while.
I mean, this is a very common thing to say, but do you feel that the experience that people have with consumer-facing technology has really changed the perception of what's possible, and that healthcare and clinical trials have really not kept up for various reasons to what's possible in their personal lives in terms of all that, the experience? And do you think that's a factor really pushing life sciences and healthcare to either make it better or become irrelevant?
Do you want to answer that, or I feel absolutely 100% it has an impact, right? I was in a call with a colleague of mine this week, a day ago, somewhere, wherever it was ago, and she said, if I needed training to use my Amazon app, I wouldn't use Amazon. Why should we should make technology in our clinical trials as easy to use as the Amazon app, right? They shouldn't have to have all this training. It shouldn't be a technology shouldn't be a burden. It should be something that should be helping. And we, I think, as a as an industry, are realizing again and again that, and more so as we move forward, that everybody uses technology on a day-to-day basis. We have to incorporate it into our clinical trials. Otherwise, we will stagnate, and we will just never get any patients, because they'll go, well, what, this is crazy, and to make it as easy as possible for them to utilize it is the way forward.
I couldn't agree more. I agree. I mean, what we use in our daily lives, it feels like, yeah, that is what they expect from us when we're there entering a clinical trial. And also with the patients, how to find the patients. They are also, we're living in different areas, and I think, yeah, we need to reach them. And as you say, Laura, the it should be so intuitive that you could use it without the training. Oh, I could agree more. I'm just, yeah. And
I mean,
there's
I think
a
that.
big gap there between the dream and the reality, right? And
I think one thing that came out again in spades the other day was that you're dealing with a vast array of end users, right? And also quite a diversity of languages. And the end users at the site are not all at the same level of experience and comfort in using the tools. But when something breaks during an actual patient visit, the gap in getting that issue resolved is a deal breaker for the sites. And when I say gap, I mean if it takes a long time, if the service provider who shows up to help can't speak the language of the patient and the coordinator, which I think you brought out in your tools, right? But that is still a major pain point and one of the biggest friction areas they cited.
I mean, I think that I don't think there's any world where we will be the same experience as the best of consumer brands, right? Because we're in a regulated industry, the question is, which is true, right? So we're never going to be quite as easy as those brands are, right? However, are there things that we absolutely could change to be closer to that ideal? And what are those, right? So is it too many lawyers? What is it that's kind of preventing us becoming more like the consumer brands, understanding that we're not delivering groceries or we're not delivering a gadget to your house, right? It's much more regulated. So that's the reality. However, the gap is seems way larger than it should be, right? That's how I see it.
Yeah, and I think this is where the vendors come in. I don't know. I don't, what is their R&D, right? How much do they listen to sites and patients to make sure that end user experience is as good as it can be as well? I mean, I think we've all got a part to play in this.
I mean, I'm definitely seeing vendors all developing site and patient advisory groups come going to meetings with
Yeah,
sites.
better.
I definitely
Agree.
think that vendors have realized that that's part of their ability to win business is to actually be shown to be site and patient friendly, right? I think they're definitely smart ones anyway. I've got that message for sure.
Very true.
So, Amir, we've
Without a
seen a
doubt.
few of them with chief patient officers. Will we next see chief site officers emerging?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, for sure.
But I think also we've been, I mean, both patients and sites have this burden. So I think it's also a shift from having that. We have a lot of with patients, which is what we need to do, but we also need the site. I think that's a shift as well, that it's been highlighted more and more that the site also plays a crucial, I mean, without the sites, not the patients. So I mean, it's they both play such a big part in this, and I think that's also been more highlighted, or from my perspective in the later years as well. So I think this space will probably be more and more important than it
Agree.
might have been. So yeah, I think, seeking this feedback, it's so important, and that's why we've also been very passionate and engaged with creating this tool.
You're
I
absolutely right,
think.
Anna. Sorry, I just wanted to say that we had the, at the SCRS conference, I've heard it again and again. We talk a lot about DCTs being patient-focused trials, patient-centric trials, right? But at CRS, they talk about making site-centric trials, and that's how you make them patient-centric. So really thinking about the site actually makes it easier for the patient. As long as the site has the tools to be able to support the patient in the trial, then it becomes a very patient-centric trial, right?
Also,
So,
I'm not sure. I'm going to
yeah,
challenge
I'm
you,
not sure
Laura.
either.
I'm not
I'm
sure.
gonna
Challenge.
have to.
When I first
There's a deal
when I
breaker
was
there.
Yeah, when I was back in
Okay.
pharma, one of the first instances 100 years ago when we were talking even just about ride sharing and helping patients with transportation, I remember calling about 20, 30 sites that were in a particular study just to hear their interest and their perspective. And I would say about a third of them, the feedback was, my patients who participate don't need transportation help. They're already coming in. And about a third of them said, I need this desperately. I'm already struggling for to do something similar. And so, I think that's probably true for a number of them, Laura, but I wish it were true for all. I just don't want to lose sight of, and here's my concern, Laura. I sense that as an industry, it's hard for us to do multiple things at once. It's hard for us to put everybody at the center. And as the puck starts to move from patient centricity to site centricity, I don't know that that always by default means that patients are going to benefit along the way. We have to kind of keep both going somehow, and that's not
Yeah.
easy.
No, I understand that. And I think and I do agree with you. I worked with sites that said similar things to me, right? So, but I wonder, are they saying that because they think it's more of a headache to say, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go, than it is to keep it the way it always just worked, right? It's the same thing, trying to get sites to use e-consent or do other bits and pieces. It's like, well, if we make it easier for them to use it, then they're more likely to go, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go, and it makes it better for the patient in the long run, right?
I suppose so. If
So
it's really low friction, if we can make it easy that way. We have about 5 minutes left, and I see Joachim, you've jumped over here, so I'd like to bounce over to you. Introduce yourself if anybody hasn't had the pleasure.
Hi, good morning in the US and good afternoon in Europe. I'm Joachim Levin, DCT specialist in Novo Nordisk, also slightly engaged with Transcelerate. But I kind of want to look at that. So I really look forward to taking this tool out for a test bin, because the way I look at it is complexity is like when you have three kids on a playground and a three-legged seesaw. And the more complexity we add on to it as sponsors to ease the burden of patient, the complexity goes up for sites, and we have no way of measuring that. And I want to make sure that I'm the one from a sponsor perspective that actually absorbs the majority of the complexity when I deploy any type of tools or any type of ecosystems, whether it's non-digital or digital DCT elements to modernize out my trials. So I think there's three of us playing here, and we're all on the same seesaw. We just need to make sure that we're the ones, absorbing the most complexities. And I need to understand how can I alleviate some of the complexities from my sites.
Joachim, you just painted this picture. I feel like somebody has to throw into ChatGPT and create an image. When three people are all playing on a seesaw together, it's never in balance.
Well, there are three-legged seesaws. I just couldn't get ChatGPT to paint the picture for me.
Jane?
And Joachim, I think that Takeda actually did build a site burden methodology they shared at Scope this year.
Missed
And
that.
it's in publication. So when it's ready, we'll drop it. But I love the analogy.
Laura, Anna, I want to make sure people in our last couple of minutes know where to find the tools that you've created. And Jane, also, if there are other tools that you want to make sure you're flagging, what resources and where might they be? And if you need to phone a friend for details, we can always tap Dan Roach, who I see is still with us as well.
I know I've just put the link in for the Modernizing Clinical Trial Content Solutions page on the Transcelerate website. You'll find the sponsor considerations for obtaining site feedback under additional resources, but there are lots of other resources there as well. The other one that the site guidance team did this year was about some considerations for support for implementation of DCT, and that's in part of the trial startup section. So,
Yeah.
Jane, are these on the tube stop that I always point folks to?
That too.
They have been integrated, and you'll be hearing more about some of these other tools that are still in development with our work streams at the annual meeting, probably on the 6th of November in Cambridge.
The annual meeting, meaning the DTRA annual meeting taking
That's
place
the
up in
one. Sorry,
Cambridge,
is there
Mass.
any other? Yeah, absolutely right.
And
I
hopefully
figured
in the
that's the one.
future as well, we can come back. We'll from a TransAlert side, go back to our sponsor members and go back and see how this has been implemented. So hopefully in the future as well, that will be revealed on TransAlert website. So.
And Laura, I want to call out my thanks for prompting what I think will be a really provocative upcoming Friday session. Does site-centric make a study patient-centric? I think it's a really provocative one to unpack further together. It clearly triggered a lot of reaction. So that means there's a lot there to discuss. I really appreciate your calling that out. Jane, anything we missed today? And as we have about 120 seconds to go here.
No, I would just encourage you to look at the tools, think about how you would implement them, regardless of where you are in the ecosystem. If you're a site, look at them and say, yeah, you missed the boat. If you're a sponsor, give it a try, like Joachim said, and tell us how do you iterate? So think of what Laura and Anna built as the high-level thought guidance and what DTRA is trying to build as a little bit more in the weeds of the process and the actual collection modalities. They
Amir, are you
fit.
satiated? I knew you were hungry for a lot of feedback and insights here.
Plenty of other questions I would have asked. That's a good thing we're here now. But I want to thank Laura and Anna. And Anna, last time I was in Sweden, I had a licorice soft serve, which was quite nice.
Oh, yeah. You should come again. I can offer you more.
I'm
Yeah.
sure I will. I'm back in the region soon. Okay. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate
Thanks
it.
for
Thank you
having
all.
us. Thank you.
Thanks for
Bye
having
now.
us. Bye.